On this episode of Pilot's Discretion, we're joined by Instagram influencer, photographer, and airline pilot Joe Costanza. He talks about flying the J3 Cub, making great aviation videos, and his advice for new airline pilots. Pilot's Discretion starts right now. Hello, pilots. I'm John Zimmerman, and thanks for listening to Pilot's Discretion from Sporties. You can see today's show links and browser archives at sporties.com/podcast, and you can email us at podcast@sporties.com. Our guest today is Joe Costanza. He's an airline captain flying the Airbus A320, but most listeners will know him better as Bananas on Instagram. Yes, banana with nine S's. That's where he posts videos and photos of him flying his beautiful yellow Cub, sometimes with his daughters and sometimes even with a skeleton in the front seat. They are really some of the most spectacular flying videos you'll see anywhere online. Joe, welcome to Pilot's Discretion.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to talking airplanes.
Well, you do such a great job of sharing the beauty that is flying and that simple flying. I think part of the appeal is the simple airplane, the grass runway. What is the message you're trying to share when you do your photos and videos?
As a pilot, it's hard to explain how much fun and how beautiful flying is. You could tell people, but until they actually experience it, they'll never really understand. The problem is, it's very difficult for most people to experience flying, especially the type of flying that I do. So I figured the best way to kind of show how great that flying is to try to capture it as artistically beautiful as I possibly can. I figure if I could capture this stuff and really kind of emulate how it looks when you're first person there and put it out on social media, that it'll hopefully give people a little bit of perspective of how awesome that actually is. Because again, a picture is worth a thousand words, and videos, it's the same thing. So if I could put that stuff out there and if it just piques one person's interest and says, you know what, that looks awesome, I want to go do that, then mission accomplished. So that's really my goal with social media and recording and photographing general aviation stuff.
This type of flying is really hot right now. You can see tail draggers and backcountry flying all over YouTube and social media in general. Why do you think it's become so popular?
I think it's because aviation and technology is moving so quickly. The future is, unfortunately, it seems like it's autonomous aircraft, really technologically advanced airplanes that can land themselves, super complex avionics. And all that stuff is great, but it kind of gets you away from why I think we all started flying in the first place, which is just stick and rudder type flying. You know, you're using both your hands, both your feet, your eyes. And it's even to the point where in the Cub and like other, these other carbon Cubs and these Huskies and all these other, kit foxes, that stuff, is you become so in tune with the airplane that you'll be able to tell your airspeed by the sound of the slipstream or the engine RPM, the feeling in the stick. So all that stuff, you're using all your senses to really get to know your airplane and to fly it to the airplane's limit, where the automation, like these new Cirruses, which are fantastic airplanes to get you from point A to B, but they're not so great in that you're becoming one with the airplane and you're learning how to fly it to at its limits and coming into short fields and soft fields and flying in the backcountry. Those airplanes are just not built for that. So I think that's why people have such a fascination with this backcountry stuff. And if you look at like Kevin Quinn, stall pilot, and Trent Palmer, you just look at one of their videos and it's just, it gives you the chills. They're out there in, the western part of the U.S. where it's just gorgeous, landing on the BLM lands, camping for the night. It's absolutely incredible. And you can only do that stuff with a certain type of airplane. So I think that's why people are so fascinated by that stuff.
Yeah, it's the art part. If there's art and science and flying, and both are great and both are helpful, but flying IFR in a turbine airplane, I find very rewarding, very fun, but that's the science part. And there's the art part of getting in a fabric airplane and never getting above 500 feet. So I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Absolutely. And my old flight instructor, who has long since flown west, he used to say, flying is the artful application of a scientific process. And that's my favorite quote ever. And unfortunately, or I guess it's fortunate because it's safe, but when I go to work and I fly the Airbus, there's no interpretation. The book is going to tell me exactly how they want me to fly the airplane, and I'm okay with that. Where in the Cub, you know, there's all different types of techniques. I can fly the same approach 12 different ways. But in the more complex airplanes, there's really only one way the company wants you to fly it. And that's okay, but it's just a completely different aspect of aviation.
There's a lot of hot rod tail draggers out there. You see, you know, a lot of highly modified stuff. The Patey brothers do crazy stuff. But I find there's great joy in what you do, which is a classic yellow J3 Cub. So tell me about, you know, is the original still the best in some ways?
You know, I think it is. And I think it isn't. So what's really nice about the simple, I have a simple J3, 65 horsepower wood prop, is that you don't have flaps, you don't have extra horsepower. So you really have to think, you know, the airplane is not moving very fast, but you still have to think ahead of it. And you have to kind of plan for what the airplane is going to be doing, you know, 10 seconds ahead of you. Because like I said, you know, there's no power to get yourself out of trouble, whether it's out climbing an obstacle or you have a wind gust. You have to really, you as a pilot have to compensate for the lack of airplane that you're really flying with. But I think that's what gives it a lot of charm, is that it really is fun because it's really all up to you. Now, the opposite of that is those airplanes. I've flown where I got my tail endorsement with Damien up in Andover, New Jersey, who's the best of the best. He has, I believe it's 180 horsepower Super Cub, and it has, you know, leading edge lift devices. It's just really highly modified. And that is awesome because by the time you go full power, you know, with two guys, you're climbing out at, you know, 1500 feet per minute or whatever it is. So that's a lot of fun too. But it's almost like cheating because you can get in and out of anywhere. Where when I fly the J3, you know, a small airport, I have to kind of plan ahead and think about the approach more, think about how I'm going to climb out, think about how heavy the airplane is, the density, altitude, all that stuff. So I feel like it just keeps me a little sharper than, say, a carbon cub would. I feel like a carbon cub would probably allow me to be a little sloppier and I could probably get away with more. But, you know, with a carbon cub, you can actually carry a friend and camping gear. Where in a J3, I could carry my camera and a water bottle and that's about it.
Well, the videos you're probably best known for, certainly I think some of the best aviation videos I've ever seen are the wingtip vortices videos, the Cub coming in early in the morning, a little bit of mist still on the ground, grass runway, and it's just a spectacular scene, really carries you away. Where did that idea come from? How did you plan that shot?
I'm a morning person, but I'd always go out. I have four kids, four daughters, and they're all young, so they have activities in school. So I said, if I want to fly the airplane, I got to wake up really early, which is fine because number one, it doesn't interrupt the kids or my wife. Number two, nobody else is out flying. And number three, it's the golden hour. So you're going to have the best lighting. It's visually, it's beautiful. It's always calm. So there's I'm fortunate that there's actually a bunch of grass strips locally. And this one particular airport is in a low-lying area. It's called Red Wing Airport. And it's a beautiful grass strip. It's usually just me and the deer. And I would land there and I'd make myself a coffee with like a little jet boil thing and just kind of sit and enjoy it and see that the mist kind of roll in. And I would set my camera up off to the side and just kind of videotape. And I'd say, you know what, it'd be cool if I come in and land and just look at the airplane landing through the mist. You know, it wasn't misty enough to where it was IFR or anything like that, but there was enough mist to where you could see it. And I went back and I remember looking at the video and it was, you know, 100 times cooler than I thought it ever would be. I was actually out there just yesterday videoing, and I mean, it's just so beautiful. And I think that's one of the few times where video actually does do it justice of just how beautiful it is. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a great lesson in aerodynamics too. It makes it look real.
Yeah. Yep.
Another one of my favorite videos you posted was one where you're flying with one of your daughters in the front seat of the Cub. Just an awesome video, incredibly joyful.
Thanks.
As you said, you have four kids, so you spend some time flying with kids. Give me your tips for flying with kids, especially in, you know, small antique airplanes.
Flying with kids, especially my kids, it's at first it was a bit strange because I just had such a high level of anxiety because that's my whole life right there, right? I mean, that's something happens to me, you know, okay, but something happens to my kids, that's a different story. So I would do it. Usually by the time they were up, awake and done with their activities, it'd be like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. So it was always bumpy. The traffic pattern was always really busy. And that just kind of stressed me out. So I would just kind of wake them up early or go late in the afternoon. So my advice to someone that's taking kids up is, number one, make sure that at least in the airplane, like a cub where they're not sitting next to you, make sure they're old enough to where you can actually communicate with them and you can understand, you know, if they have a concern or if they're afraid. And I also, my cub has a lap belt. So they do sell like a 5-point harness, but it's only for when they're really small. But really just kind of go up when you're not going to be distracted by anything such as a busy traffic pattern or windy. Actually, not funny, but interesting story. The first time I ever took my daughter up in the airplane was a couple months after I bought the airplane. And it was a little windy, but she really wanted to go. And I was pressured into it a little bit. And as soon as I took off, I had instant regret because it was really bumpy, really windy. And she had a blast, but I was inside. I was dying. So I landed and it was fine. But I was one of those times where I was really thankful to be on the ground. So just make sure, especially if it's the first time with a kid, just make sure you have everything going for you, you know, really good weather, make sure you feel well, make sure they feel well, and try to make sure that the airport or local pattern is not too busy because you don't want to be distracted by them or not be able to pay attention to them because you're distracted by the four other airplanes in the pattern.
Now, you've amassed quite a following, especially on Instagram. And I saw you say recently that the best part about being well-known on social media is meeting interesting people. Which I thought was interesting because there's so much negative news about social media. We all have our own gripes about social media. But tell us about the good part there and how you found it to be a source of connection.
As my following grew, I'd interact with a ton of people via direct messages. And through that, you're actually able to build legit friendships and connections without actually ever meeting the people. So I originally, one of the first things I did was actually just about a year ago. We all got together, a bunch of us that we all connected through social media, and Eric Webb from AOPA suggested, hey, why don't we all get together and I'll fly the 170 that we're going to raffle off. I'll fly it up to your airport and we'll hang out and just kind of shoot videos and finally meet each other. So we all did that. And I mean, that was like the beginning of, wow, this is really cool how you can connect with people and really make lifelong friendships. And through that, I've met great people. You know, one guy, Ed, lives up in New Hampshire. He's got a Cherokee 6. So, you know, I talked to a couple people like, hey, you know anyone that has an airplane for a photo ship? And it's like, yeah, I know the guy. Or Ethan O'Rourke up in Milwaukee. He's great at videoing. So if everyone's like, you know, if anyone needs video, I'm like, hey, you know, I know a guy there. Same thing with Kyle Newsom. So you meet all of these people and it's really, really cool because you meet people that you otherwise wouldn't really interact with on day-to-day life. Kelly, who lives up in Chicago, she's relatively young. And I always show my daughters her videos because she's early 20s. She flies a Stearman. She owns a Bonanza. She instructs in a Cub. She was actually the first person who ever flew my Cub other than me. So that was, and she did that when we all got together and met up. So that was really cool. And then we met up again and Oshkosh and Sun and Fun. We all got a house together. And then people that I talked to through Instagram, we all met down in Oshkosh. It's funny because you're walking around and you're like, hey, you know, I think I know you. And then you're like, yeah, you know, I love your videos. So that was really cool to meet up with those people, exchange memories, experiences. So that was really cool because without social media, I'd go to Oshkosh with my 2-3 friends and that's the only people that I would really interact with. But now, I mean, you could walk around and just really just talk to anybody or just shoot a message. Hey, I'll be here for the air show. You want to meet up after? And so I think that's what's really, really cool. And I think that is what's so great about social media is being able to connect with individuals that you either follow or you interact with via messages. So I think that's what's great about it.
Yeah, aviation's always been described as some large, extended, weird, fun family. And it is in a lot of ways. But
yeah,
if you use social media the right way, that is it's a great way to extend that family metaphor. Now,
yeah,
it's not all fun. So how about the bad part? There's always the experts in the comments who are always have all the answers.
Yeah.
Always like to tell you what you're doing wrong. How do you handle the criticism?
It's tough because you ultimately have to have really thick skin. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And I understand, you know, it's hard to see a video on social media and kind of understand the context behind it. Like one of the most common things you'll get is, oh, that, you know, great video, but your choice of music is horrible. And it's like, well, you know, it's a slow motion video. So like, I can't have the sound of an engine slow down 25% or, you know, as a quote unquote creator, I kind of want to convey a certain emotion and this song kind of fits that. And that's fine. And then there's kind of the really, I don't want to say the dark side, but the really negative is when you have a lot of accounts, call them meme accounts, that will pick out an individual and kind of be hurtful and make fun of them. I think we can all laugh at ourselves. I think we're all somewhat deserving of it. But if you start attacking someone personally, I think that's unfair, especially if you're going to hide behind an account without a name. I don't think that's fair. And most recently, I had one of the videos I talked about new hire airline pilots and kind of, you know, some of the entitlement. And somebody commented and said, you know, you're being passive aggressive and you're the arrogant one. And, you know, you're portraying this image on social media, but that's not the real you. And it's like, listen, you know, you don't have to agree with everything that I say, and that's fine. But for you to assume that you know me because of a 1 minute video is equally unfair, right? So that's kind of tough. And, you know, you want to get into an argument sometimes on social media, but what's the point? I mean, that's not, you know, that's not the point of social media. And then you'll get people. I have a video with my middle daughter where the sweater came out of the back cargo compartment, which it's a cub that happens, you know, the thing opens up. And it had like 8 million views and it had like 1,000 messages of, oh, you're the worst father in the world. Where's your seatbelt? How could you let that happen? Your daughter's going to fall out. And it's like, you know, I can't answer every single person. So that's kind of the negative of social media. But again, everyone has the right to their own opinion. So you can't really focus on it too much. So.
Yeah, don't engage with people who aren't engaging thoughtfully. And if there's someone who's engaging because they want to make a connection, then that's great. But if they're just a hater, then there's really no point in giving them oxygen.
Exactly, exactly. They're just going to ruin your day.
All right, Joe, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to ask you about that airline video you made that made some waves and I thought made some great points. So we'll take a quick break and be back with some more questions.
Earn all your pilot ratings and keep your flying skills sharp with Sporty's Pilot Training Plus. This all-inclusive membership unlocks Sporty's complete library of award-winning video courses so you can learn anywhere you have your phone, tablet, or laptop. For one annual fee, you get access to over $1,500 in courses, a smart investment in your flying career. Plus, enjoy free shipping every day of the year at Sporties.com and apply for one of our 3 annual flight training scholarships. Learn more at Sporties.com/pilot training. Now, back to Pilot's Discretion.
We are back with Joe Costanza, whose day job is flying the Airbus for an airline. And Joe, you mentioned the video that you recently posted where you shared some friendly advice for new first officers. I thought it was a fantastic video, amazingly honest.
Thank you.
You had a quote in there that's one of my favorite quotes maybe of the year. You said, be a little humble. Just remember the boomer captain that's sitting to your left probably has more time copying holding instructions from New York Approach than you have total time, which is a great way to say it. I'm assuming that very descriptive statement comes from some personal experience there. But do you think the accelerated rate at which pilots are getting hired at airlines has caused some entitlement? Is this just the older generation who's grumpy? What's going on here?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. And I'm sure that when I first got on the line for my first airline job, the captains probably thought I was somewhat entitled. And I very well may have been. But I think what's happening now is the hiring boom that's going on right now is, you know, a lot of people have gotten their private pilot's license just a couple of years ago, even as early as during COVID. And normally you would have to flight instruct for a year, year and a half, build time, go fly for maybe a cargo operator, like a flying checks at night. This was probably a decade or so ago, but even as recently as when I was coming up, you'd have to go fly either a commuter. I flew Saabs for a year, or go fly for a regional airline for a couple years, making no money, upgrade the captain. And then if you were fortunate enough to even meet the minimums, then you would have to have somebody that was at the airline you wanted to go to kind of walk your stuff in. You had to go to job fairs. You had to volunteer on your time off. Doing all of this while you had very, very lackluster work rules in the regional world, making no money. So it was very, very difficult. So I think when you finally got to the point where you were at your destination airline, you had been through a lot and you realized how hard it was to get there. So you were very open and willing to listen to the girl or guy next to you because you didn't want to ruin it. And you worked hard to get there. So you were very open to receiving everything. I think now what's happening, and this is not everybody, I've flown with some really, really sharp, well-mannered people with very little time and that they were young. But I think some people, they're getting hired at a regional with bare minimum time, which is pretty low. It's, let's call it 1,500 hours. And then they're getting hired at a legacy airline, which was notoriously difficult to get hired at. Now they're getting hired with bare minimum experience. And I think what's happening is I think sometimes they think that's due to how great they are when it's really more a supply and demand issue. So I think when they get there, they're rightfully so, they're excited, but I think their arrogance maybe peaks a little bit and says, hey, look at me, I got here in 2 years. I don't have to listen to you type of thing. And the airline that I work for, which I love my airline dearly, but it's a low-cost carrier. So a lot of people have the ultimate goal of going to, let's say, FedEx, UPS, Delta, United, American, which is their right. But if you're going to come to my airline or you're going to come, you know, if we're going to fly a trip together, I understand that you might have aspirations that are other than this airline, but you still have a job to do and you still have to fly the airplane the way the company wants to fly it. And your head needs to be in the game here because, you know, myself, the airplane, the company and the 220 people behind us, you know, you owe it to them to make sure you're as professional as possible. So I think that's what we're seeing a little bit. And I think what this younger generation doesn't realize that I unfortunately had to go through is the music will stop eventually. And airlines are notorious for hiring until they furlough. And when the music stops, you don't want to be on the bottom of that seniority list. And I think another thing is, so I had this debate with a couple people, but they say, well, I think people are becoming airline pilots now because of the money. I still think most people have a passion for flying, but there might be some truth to that because now, you know, you go to a regional airline, you can make six figures relatively quickly. Where when I came through, there really wasn't that opportunity unless you were really senior captain, and that's no longer the case here. So I think that may motivate people too. But it's just very interesting times, and it's good because, you know, rising tides lifts all boats. So every airline that has a great contract, it's going to trickle down, and I think that's great. But I do think that it leads to a little bit of entitlement, which, the flight deck is no place for arrogance and entitlement. So I just think some people, not all, but some people need to just keep that in check because sometimes they're dismissive of advice from people that have years and years and thousands of hours of experience. And you don't have to like the person next to you, but you should respect their experience and at least be willing to listen to them.
Do you see the airlines adjusting how they do training or initial experience?
Yes.
To react to this, or is this on an individual captain first officer basis?
That's a great point. I think what we're seeing now, and this is the case through all of the airlines, is it's taking a lot longer for people to get through initial training, and they have typically you would have, let's say, 30 hours of what's called initial operating experience. Where once you finish all your training, you go out and fly revenue passenger flights with a Czech airman, and you get 30 hours and then you're signed off. Now I'm hearing the average has gone up significantly, almost two times that amount. And some people have as much as 100 hours. And that was unheard of just a couple of years ago. And it's not necessarily their fault because a lot of them are coming from a Seminole to an Airbus. I mean, that is a huge jump. And I don't know if I would have been able to do it. I had a tough time going from, you know, a Duchess to a turboprop, a Saab 340. So, you know, it's not their fault. It's just kind of the time frame that we're in. But again, you know, that costs the airlines a lot of money. You can't hire as much because you can't get people through the hiring pipeline. And then there's still also attrition. There's even guys going from United to Delta or Delta to FedEx. So all of that used to never really be a thing. And now it is. So that's what makes it just unprecedented times and really, really interesting. And the other thing too is, you know, airline training programs, my airline specifically was, I don't want to say the bare minimum, but it wasn't handholding you through the whole thing. And now it just seems like there's just a lot of, I don't want to call it handholding, but it's just taking people almost, you know, a lot longer to get through that initial training than it would normally. So.
So if there's a listener today who's listening to this and they're in flight training, maybe they've got their commercial certificate, they're a flight instructor building time, what would your advice be to them other than the valid point about mindset and humility? Are there skills they should work on or experience they should seek out?
I would say just talk to friends that are in the industry. And here's another great thing about social media. If you don't have friends that are in the industry, just go find a random person on social media that that you know is at an airline and shoot them a message. 99.9% of all airline pilots I know are more than willing to talk about their experiences and how they got to the airline and kind of mentor if they can. And I also want to point out that, you know, slow down and kind of enjoy what you're doing now. You know, one of my biggest regrets is always being feeling the pressure of having to, my end goal was to be an airline pilot. And I just always used my flight training as the means to an end. And then when I finally got to the airline job, I realized how much I actually enjoyed general aviation flying and how much I missed it. So I want people to slow down and kind of enjoy what they're doing now, because you will most likely look back on it one day and miss it, because you'll get your airline job eventually. So, you know, just kind of slow down and enjoy the process, if you will.
That is excellent advice for all kinds of places in life.
Yes.
Joe, we always end each episode here with a series of rapid fire questions. It's a segment we call Ready to Copy. So I'll ask some questions on a variety of topics and you give me your quick answer. Are you ready to copy like I'm New York approach?
I'm ready.
Why nine S's and bananas?
Good question. I don't know. I think I started with bananas and it took nine S's until it was available.
What have you learned in the Cub that makes you better in the Airbus?
Energy management.
What's an example of that in the Airbus? Landing?
Getting the Airbus doesn't like to go down and slow down at the same time. So you have to get creative in how you do that.
For a pilot who has never landed on a grass strip, describe what that's like.
It's like landing on a pillow when you do it right. And it's like landing on a bag of rocks when you don't.
My first 25 landings in a tail dragger when I got checked out were all on grass, and I thought it was much more forgiving than the paved runway. So definitely if you're getting checked out, go find some grass somewhere. It'll give you a lot more room to play with.
Yeah, 100%.
I saw a video recently where you landed the Cub with just throttle, rudder, and trim, no stick. What do you learn from doing that exercise?
I learned that the airplane could be flown by very little input from you. And sometimes over controlling the airplane, you're kind of hurting yourself more than just letting the airplane fly with just very gentle inputs.
Do you prefer wheel landing or 3-point?
I used to prefer 3-point landings, and then I would prefer 3-point on grass and wheel landings on pavement. And I feel like lately I've been doing a little bit more wheel landings, but I think I can fairly say that I love them both equally for different situations.
Some tail dragger pilots, myself included, will occasionally do what I call the 2.5-point landing. Have you ever done the modified 3-point that sort of wants to be a wheel landing?
I feel like that's what half my landings are like that. Yeah.
Your Cub has wheel pants. Is that the right way to do it and a lot of fun and looks great, or is that actually cheating?
You know, I like it because it was a factory option and it kind of finishes off that look. But some people have a love-hate relationship with it. And it is a dead giveaway that I'm not going out there doing backcountry flying with wheel pants. But it does keep the underside of the wings clean. So there's that.
That's a great point, actually. That's a great point. If you've ever seen a tail dragger that's been in a slightly wet field, you'll see the evidence all over the underside of the wing.
Yeah.
What's your best tip for taking better aviation photos or videos? If I'm an amateur and I've got a GoPro or I've got a camera and I want to share some of that passion that you share, what should I do to make it less boring or less bad?
The single best thing you could do is go fly during golden hour, which is an hour after the sun rises to an hour before the sun sets. There's another quote that says, when it comes to photography and videography, professionals worry about money, amateurs worry about equipment, and masters worry about light. So it's all in the lighting, and you'll get that really soft golden hour lighting early in the morning or late afternoon.
Wonderful advice. We use the same thing here at Sporties when we're shooting video. You can worry about all kinds of technical things, and it's probably more about the setup of the shot and the time of the day.
100%.
Let's get to that equipment. It plays some role. What's your favorite gear for shooting?
I have a Nikon Z9, which is a mirrorless camera, and it has the ability to shoot 8K, which is really nice. But my favorite part of my equipment are the long telephoto lenses that I have. because they have really wide aperture. And what that means is I can shoot at what's called, let's say, f2.8. So that allows for a lot of light, so I can shoot low light, but it also has this really cool effect called bokeh, where the subject, in this case, the airplane, is in focus and everything else is kind of blurred out and looks buttery smooth. And that's kind of my favorite part of shooting these videos.
How about drones? I know you use those a little bit in some of your shoots. How do you decide when you need a drone shot and when you don't?
Yeah, I absolutely love the perspective that drone shots give you. It obviously adds a whole other dynamic there. Not only the complexity of the shot, but the FAA and the FARs. But usually, if I'm at an airport and I look up or look around and I just feel like, you know what, let's see what the drone would look like here. And really, it doesn't matter where you are, a drone shot is going to look cool. So that's what's really great about drones, is it doesn't matter where you are, you put a drone up in the air and it's going to give you a really cool, unique perspective.
You're based at Flying W Airport, which is a unique place with a fascinating history. People can Google it and look it up. It's, you know, airplane shape, swimming pool, the tiki bar, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
I know it's had its share of ups and downs over the years, but broadly speaking, do you think we need more places like that where there's sort of a social or a fun element to the airport and not just a place to store your airplane?
Yeah, you know, I really think we do. I've been to so many airports where it's an FBO and hangars and it looks like a ghost town, even though, you know, the airport is filled with airplanes. You know, where I'm at, we have a row of hangars. In the summer, you have the tiki bar and you have the pool and there's all kinds of events like rock bands. They just had a bourbon and bacon festival at the airport. They have balloon festivals. But what's really great is there's so much activity and the airport is so alive, where you go back to where the hangars are and everyone's hangars open. Guys are just hanging out. They're grilling. They're talking airplanes. And I've become friends with friends for life, like genuinely great friends. My wife laughs at me because, you know, some of my closest friends are, you know, in their 80s because they're at the airport. We're just hanging out. They're retired and we all just kind of hang out and become really good friends. And a lot of times we all go to the airport when, you know, you're not going to fly, but you're just going to go and hang out and do some hangar flying. And I think that's what really makes my airport so special.
Joe, our last question is always the same. You have one final flight and we want to know, what are you flying and where are you going?
Flying to my Cub, and I'm not going anywhere special. That's what's great about the Cub. It's never a mission. It's just go up and just enjoy it. That's it.
Joe, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Pilot's Discretion, brought to you by Sporties, training and equipping pilots worldwide for over 60 years. For more episodes and today's show links, visit sporties.com/podcast. I'm John Zimmerman. We'll see you next time on Pilot's Discretion.